right. Welcome back, everyone, to Deadline City. We are your hosts. I'm Zoraida Cordova.
And I'm Danielle Clayton.
And we are going to
Destination Hero and Villain Lounge. So we are kicking off a couple of weeks of character work. Both Zoraida and I are in deadline hell, which is normal for us.
That's why we started this podcast.
Right. And one of the things that I've been wrestling with, and I know that Z has been wrestling with, is making sure that our characters do what we need them to do. And distinguishing between heroes and villains. And we did a great villain podcast discussion with V.E. Schwab last season, which is great, and you should check it out. And this is building upon that, but really digging into the hero, because we're going to be talking about heroes specifically and main characters over the next several weeks.
Yes, so this is going to be the same way that we did a world-building intensive for 4 weeks. We're going to do the same thing with character and hero and villain journeys.
Yes, and so we're going to play a game today.
Yeah.
And it's going to be guess if they are a villain or a hero. And so Zoraida is going to read out characteristics, and I'm going to read out characteristics and test each other.
Yeah, we're just going to say, like, the things that this character has done in the book.
Right.
Warning, there's going to be massive spoilers. So if you have not read White Cat, Uprooted, or Arrow.
Arrow's a book?
Arrow's a TV show.
Oh, I'm not telling what mine are.
Oh.
So.
Okay. Well, there might be massive spoilers, so if you hear we're going to say the title of the book first, and if you haven't read it, well, it's been a lot of years, so you just catch up.
Oh, I wasn't going to say my title. I was just going to say characteristics of a character.
Well, okay, cool. You go first.
No, you go first.
Fine. Do I say the character's name, then?
No. Oh, just say this character.
Okay. This character is the school bookie, gambles, turned his ex-girlfriend into, actually, ex-best friend, into a cat, killed people without knowing he was killing them using a magic he didn't know he had. He saves the people he loves, like his mom. But in order to save his mom, he has to dupe other men and steal all their money.
That's a hero. That's a hero in my book. That's a hero.
What about everything else
Look,
he has
I believe,
done?
I believe that there are, and it's my favorite kind of hero, one that I hope to write one day.
Mm-hmm.
It's the reformed villain.
But he's not reformed
or
at all.
The person who has to do some bad things, but mm-hmm. is still a hero. Okay?
Right, because he's saving the people that
he loves. Okay?
So, okay.
I love it. I say that's a hero.
Doesn't matter what he did. I mean, first of all, I love this boy. Like, I read this book so long ago.
It's
incredible.
It's incredible.
So it's White Cat by Holly Black, Castle Sharp. This is not in her fairy series world, but it is essentially, like, how to write a book about a con, right? How to con the con. And Castle is the main character.
I love. That's what this character is.
He's
a hero
the main character,
me.
But he is super complex. So he does not fit into the stereotypical villain or hero. He's the hero because he's the main character of the story, but he also does some shady shit.
Look, I'm here for it. Those are the types of heroes I like anyway, because I find heroes to be boring.
Whatever, I love heroes.
Anyways, because you love it. You love Captain America type.
I do.
Shit. Okay, so my character loves to eavesdrop often, gathering information. Also,
Harriet the Spy.
No, but I love that bitch too. She's great. She was my first character where I was like, oh, I don't always have to be sugar and spice and everything nice. Love her. Yes, Harriet. This character can tells lies mm-hmm. and can be very disrespectful and unruly, doesn't love showering, also just sort of does what she wants to do when she wants to do it
okay.
And argues with the people who are taking care of her. She doesn't have parents. She just has an uncle.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about me?
No.
I do have parents.
You do have parents. What's wrong with you? I'm going to tell your mother just what happens. Oh my God. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. Also, she uses this particular object to decipher truth. It was given to her. And I don't know if you've read this book series.
I don't think so.
And she was told that it takes so many years of study to learn the codes and the symbols on the instrument. But she's like, I'm going to do what I want to do, and I'm going to do it. And she also has a little daemon called Pantalaimon.
Okay, it's the golden compass.
Yes, Lyra. And some people have labeled her as, like, villainous. Like, mm-hmm. that she's not your stereotypical hero because she doesn't do everything right. She's also disrespectful, rude, and, you know, pesky.
Yeah.
And so I love those kinds of heroes. The ones that don't always do the right things.
Right.
All the time.
There's a gray area when it comes to writing, and I think that makes it so much more exciting.
Okay, hit me with another one.
Okay, so this person, takes a girl from a village every decade and keeps her in his castle.
Villain.
To cook, clean, villain. And just live in the house.
This is stolen labor. This is
he teaches slavery. Her magic and risks everything for her, including his life and reputation towards the end.
I don't care. If you steal people, I'm a descendant of American chattel slavery. Okay? So I cannot feel good about you if you are taking people and making them do domestic work and then, oh, you love me? You have, right? This is like the story of Sally Hemings. Like, no. Like, Thomas Jefferson? No.
It's Beauty and the Beast.
I don't care.
It's actually Uprooted by Naomi Novik, and it's the dragon.
I don't like that shit. He's a villain, right?
He is technically the villain, but he's also the...
Is he a villain with the heart of gold?
There's a bigger villain. No, there's a bigger villain.
So he's a lesser baddie.
Yeah.
He's like a little baddie.
He's like the villain of the village because it's like, there's this man and blah, blah, blah. And I actually forgot why he takes a girl, like the women. Is it like... I honestly don't remember why he takes the girls. But it's sort of like how in Beauty and the Beast, like, Belle sacrifices herself for her dad.
Right.
And in Disney's The Beauty and the Beast, he has a curse placed upon him.
Right. With the flower.
Yes. But in this one, I don't remember. And then there's another plot about, like, a bigger forest that is evil.
Okay.
And so the forest is truly evil because you never know who gets infected by the evil forest. But you never have like a face to it. It's like this like great, great evil that you can't overcome. And so this is an instance where we see the difference between a character that is perceived bad and also does bad things.
Traffics women.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He sets them free.
Okay.
After 10 years.
Yeah. Slavery.
They don't have to live in the cold village with all the other peasants.
For 10 years, they can just be a slave?
No, they live in a nice castle.
Whatever. A slave in a castle is still a slave.
Yeah. You're right.
Okay. Exactly.
And so, instances of two bigger, smaller villains. So you have this smaller villain who's like the villain to these people, and then you have the villain who is actually
the big evil.
The big evil infecting with evil magic other parts of the kingdom and starting a war.
Right. It's like in Lord of the Rings, you've got like Sauron, yeah. And then you have the Eye.
Yeah.
Right? The Eye of Sauron, and then you have like Saruman
and
the other smaller evils that feed the big sort of nameless, like, faceless.
Kind of, yeah, faceless, thing. A big faceless evil. That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this character tells a lot of lies and manipulates.
You like liars.
Oh, I love them.
You love liar characters.
Yes.
It's crazy.
And she does that because she has to, her birth order means that she's not the oldest girl, but she's also not the baby.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, she's in this particular place where, like, the things about her are sort of poo-pooed upon. So she tells lies, and some of them are helpful or not, and she has to kill people. She's also a murderer. She's also a thief. She steals things. And she had to learn, because of the things that happened to her family, she had to learn the art of being able to disappear and reappear when needed.
Okay.
And often change her face. And she also had a list of people who she was going to kill,
mm-hmm.
who hurt her and hurt her family. And so, but is she a villain or a hero?
I mean, she's a villain because she murders people, if we want to get to the black and white definition. But
what if those people caused so much strife and anguish on so many other people?
She's
a villain?
No, I think that you're just revenger, like Flora says. We're the revenges. You're an avenger. Like, you're avenging your family. I think that,
so that
this
makes her not a villain.
I think that is a incredibly gray area.
Okay. Do you want to know who she is?
Yeah, it's Arya Stark.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't think Arya is a villain. I don't think of her as a villain. I think that she was wronged and she's trying to set the world right.
Right. I think that she's
and she kills the Night King, spoiler.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think that she might do villainous things, but I think we have to talk about, when we get deeper in, what is the intention in the heart, right? Which I think really boils down to whether a person is a villain or a hero.
So kind of like in Twilight, when Rosalie goes around killing all the men who gang raped her.
Yes.
She's not a villain because she's a just...
murderer.
I don't want to use the word revenger. I think it's stupid.
Right. Because it sounds like, what are those mice? The rescuers?
The rescuers.
Those are so cute. But yeah. It sounds like the bad version of them. Like, save the day through murder.
Yeah, I think, right. So I think that goes into creating a backstory for your hero that is compelling. So that, is there anything a character could do that would be a no-go for you? Like kidnapping young women and taking them into your castle.
Yes. Slavery and enslaving people, to me, puts you, if we're doing categories, puts you into
number
that
one.
Category.
Right.
Right? Murder should. Right?
But murder is complicated.
Is it complicated? Murder is complicated. Right. Because if someone rapes you or rapes a character, then I feel like they have just... right to, you know, seek out revenge in some sort of way.
Yeah. Or if they've killed your entire family.
Right.
Right. We go to, spoiler alert, Kaz Brekker in Six of Crows, which we talk about a lot.
Right.
But, like, his entire motivation for success is to destroy the man who was responsible for his brother's death. Right.
Right.
So, like, what is...
There are lines.
What are the lines, right? What are the lines we are allowed to cross? What are the lines that we let characters cross in order for us to love them?
And also, what are the lines between hero and villain, which is what we're talking about? Because Kaz could easily be a villain.
Oh, 100%. He's a villain.
And I think it's the intention in the heart.
The intention in the heart is what makes you a hero or a villain.
Mm-hmm. I think so. But we can keep going.
Okay.
Do yours.
Next. I was debating between a couple. Okay, so... this is a rich playboy who gets stranded on a deserted hell island. And not technically hell, but it's the Chinese word for hell. They discover a bunch of things about their family's past.
What the hell is that?
And he trains to be... he becomes a killer on this island. And then he gets hired by, like, governments and stuff to become a killer, and then decides that he needs to put everything that he's learned, he takes with him home to put a stop to the corruption and the crime. But the corruption starts at the top, so he starts just murdering and killing all of these, like, CEOs and lawyers and people in charge of government.
So he's like a Robin Hood figure for, like, corporation, but for corporations, like, what's he getting?
He's just
ridding the world of evil,
ridding the world
by
of
being
evil, by killing people.
That one's hard because
And he says, "You have failed this city."
This dumb. What is this? This is not a hero I'm interested in. This is not a villain.
Why?
I'm interested in. I don't like it. I hate it.
He has a just cause, right? Like he believes his family. It's Oliver Queen from The Arrow.
That's why I never watched this damn show.
It is beautiful. You promised me you would watch it.
Okay. Continue.
And you get to learn why he does the things that he does, right? Like, why he takes certain actions. He was deserted on this island for 5 years, but there's so many things that happened on it that really changed him. And so he goes from being this naive dickbag of, like, a playboy to being, like, a responsible, not even responsible, but for having a cause. Right? So all of a sudden, the future of his city rests on his shoulder. But in order for him to do this, he starts killing people. And so his journey goes from murdering and slaughtering people to becoming an actual hero where you're saving the day, but you're putting bad guys away instead of just killing them.
I mean, fine. I will watch this. But I am still, yeah, I'm still on the fence about that. He better be sexy. Because if he's sexy.
He's mad sexy.
If he's sexy, I can get on board. But if he's not sexy, then I'm.
Do we forgive villains for being attractive?
Yes, we do.
We do. Yes. Absolutely.
Yes, we do. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because there are some that I'm like, no.
Oh, wait. What's the name of the Punisher? I love him.
I just think that you saying that term is making me laugh, and I'm trying not to laugh. And
Frank
keep it clean.
Castle is the Punisher.
What does he punish? Who does he punish?
Me. So, have you watched any of the Marvel TV shows?
No.
It stars him, and it stars Ben Barnes.
Ooh.
And Ben Barnes is...
The Darkling.
He is the Darkling. Oh, I'm so excited. But he's also their best friends. They start off as best friends. And then Frank gets his wife and daughter are brutally murdered. And he just starts killing people until he finds out who gave that order.
Look, that's real.
And
that's
some
mafia shit.
And
right
so
there.
Billy Russo, and he was ex-Marine, and so mm-hmm. Billy Russo is played by Ben Barnes, and you start off with him. He's like, he's so handsome, and he's so attractive, and he's like such a like charming. And then you discover that he's a bad guy. But he's doing all of the bad things above board and like with like the sign off from the government, whereas like the Punisher is just taking matters into his own hands and just fucking shit up.
Just punishing everyone.
It is one of the most brutal, violent shows I have ever
watched.
Is
it on Netflix?
Yes, on Netflix.
Okay.
I think it's still on Netflix. They might not have taken it down yet. But it is, I watched it the way that I watched The Walking Dead, where I just had a pillow and I was just like holding a pillow. And just watching it, like, I couldn't look away. Natalie Parker loves The Punisher. Like, we just went
crazy
over. She
loves Punished. She's going to hate that.
She's going to hate that.
That's why I said it.
So, yeah. So, I mean, those are instances of villains that were made because of their social circumstances.
Right.
And they have taken action. And they... I think for them, things are black and white, right? For the Arrow, it's like you do bad things. You failed this city. I kill you.
Okay, and that's the line.
That's the line. Yeah.
Is okay.
And I think in those a lot of those instances when we talk about villains in villains in books, there's so much more room for development. Whereas in TV shows, I think that because we do the comic book. Comic book retelling or the live action version of a comic book, we almost have to separate into good and bad.
Right. And don't you think we have to have little shortcuts that quickly tell us and code and seed, oh, this is a bad guy. This is a bad person. Mm-hmm. Pretty quickly, like a shorthand.
And that's funny because if you look at the Instagram stuff for the Grisha show, mm-hmm. On Ben Barnes's trailer, they wrote bad guy on his name. And it's just, I think that's hilarious because it's like, that's just, it's cut and dry. The Darkling is a bad guy.
Right. Yeah. Because in her fandom, there is discussion about the Darkling and him being seductive.
Right, and being a misunderstanding. He's seductive. He's sexy as fuck. And now that he's Ben's, like before it was Ben Barnes, I was like, fuck the Darkling, Mal forever. But now that it's Ben Barnes, I was like, fuck, I've loved Ben Barnes since Narnia.
It's gonna be
you
rough.
You got me.
Right. It's gonna be hard. It's definitely gonna be hard to hate him. And that sort of, I think, leads us into thinking about, we started talking about the characteristics, right? And the characteristics of villains versus heroes and how those parallel. And we kept talking about the reformed villain hero. And I was going to describe one of my favorite villains when we were playing the game, but Damon Salvatore from The Vampire Diaries. Mm-hmm. Whew, first of all, that is an attractive man who plays him, so he's easy on the eyes. But there's something about that character, that reformed intention in the heart that I keep talking about, where at the start of the show, at the start of the books, whatever, you know that this is a bad guy.
Yeah.
And he does bad things.
It's one of the best TV show twists. I didn't watch The Vampire Diaries Confession until last year.
Right.
Because so I went to Natalie and Tessa's house and they
Tell
were like
they are.
Natalie Parker and Tessa Grattan, who are YA writers that you've heard on our podcast multiple times. And they sat me down and they were like, okay, we're going to watch one episode of The Vampire Diaries. Almost the entire season later, I didn't do my deadline, which I was supposed to be doing. All I wanted was to watch 5 episodes of The Vampire Diaries at night.
It's good. And
the way that because they told me, I was like, why does anyone like Damon? I don't get it. Stefan Forever. Like,
a fool's errand. That was a fool's statement. Mm-hmm. And then you got.
And then I got. And then I was like, and then Natalie was like, just you wait.
Just you wait.
Everyone says that.
Everybody says that.
And then by the end of the season, I was like, fuck Stefan. He's such a dick. Damon forever.
See?
And it's the way that we develop character. It's the way that we show all of Damon's bruises after we see all of the terrible things that he does.
Let's talk about it. So basically, the way I think a good villain goes is that you see their villainy or whatever, their bad stuff, but then we see the bruise that, when pressed, creates the villain. And we create that sort of, you test me, you press me, you will get a reaction that is deeply rooted in trauma, mm-hmm. or in backstory or pain. Because a villain without a backstory is boring to me. Right. So it's interesting when we think about villains like Voldemort, right? Until they built his backstory as Tom Riddle, as this outside kid, as this orphaned kid with no family really to speak of, I just found him to be completely flat and boring. He's still a little boring to me.
Yeah.
But Damon is interesting because I think that his intention in his heart started out evil.
Yeah.
And then the introduction of Elena changed it and softened and changed the intention. And sometimes it flip-flop.
Yeah.
I'm like, good, bad, good, bad, good, bad.
And he stays Damon. That way, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's, he's lived a long time. It's about self-preservation.
Right. So you can recognize why he would make the choices that he does. And it also plays on this thing psychologically that a lot of people have where they think that they can change a person. Where they think that if I'm the special one, that if I just have you just have me in your life, you won't turn bad. Mm-hmm. And that creates such wonderful narrative tension because I'm like, bitch, right. This is a bad idea.
Right. And also,
he's always going to be bad.
Yes, he's always going to be bad. And when you just, but also there's like a moment where you discover like everything that he is is almost, it's not even that it's not his fault, it's that he never asked for this. He never asked for immortality. He was going to give it up, he was going to turn it down, but it was because of his brother, whom he is eternally bound to.
Right.
And I love that relationship. You know, I love siblings. I just think it's super powerful, and, man, that show's still so fucking good, even though, like, the clothes are super early 2000s.
It's, parts of it are stupid, like the way they did My Girl Bonnie wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I do think that is an idea of a reformed villain hero, if there ever was one. But in terms of characteristics, what I like to do, is think about villains, and when I'm writing a book, I make a chart. And I put, I stack them against each other. So I have you can do it with a lot of different shows or books. Write out the hero, who they are, what they want, what they need, what they do, right? Same thing for the villain. And then see how they contrast each other. Because I believe that a villain thinks that they're the hero of the story.
Yeah,
they absolutely. Just have a different thing that they want and what they need. And they usually end up never getting what they need, which mm-hmm. is the poetic justice of being a villain. But I'm more attracted to villains in a text than I am to the heroes.
Why?
I don't know. I want to know what the trouble is. You like Captain America. You like...
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, everything's so clean. Let's keep it moral and just. Let's save the day.
Yeah, because he has a cause that he truly believes in. He started off as an underdog. He weighed like 90 pounds. He had asthma. He couldn't even get... He tried so hard. He was willing to commit fraud to join the military. And this was during a time...
You like Noble. When we were,
yes, he's you, noble.
You love that shit.
Okay? And so because he is so selfless, he has chosen to become this experiment.
And this is the husband you're going to end up with. And I'm going to have to deal with, like, this noble motherfucker who I can't tell jokes around, who's going to be, like, so uptight.
You can tell jokes around Steve
Rogers.
And
noble. And so noble.
Yeah, so he does all of these things, but because he has such a strong belief, he turns into a villain in his own series, in his own trilogy. So, like, in Captain America Civil War, there's a division between all of the Avengers because Iron Man and Captain America are in direct opposition to each other. So they're fighting each other because of the one thing that they believe in. Steve believes they should have free will and not sign away their powers to government. Whereas Iron Man is like, we're going to get attacked by all these like aliens. We have to be policed because we have caused a lot of destruction. And then all the fighting begins and he grows a beard and he goes to Wakanda and he gets a new shield and it is fantastic.
Right. And you're here for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You just want that beard. That's all this is about.
Mad good.
That's all that's about. But it's interesting that you love the noble. You love the noble hero. And I like the villain. I like the villainist hero because I like the fact that they enter the story battered and pissed off or with a bruise. It's like when we think about, and if you do a villain right, I, as the reader, will think, well, maybe he's not wrong. The method of the madness is wrong. Murdering people willy-nilly is not a nice thing to do. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you understand where it comes from, like Magneto. Totally get
it. Totally correct. 100%.
He lives through the Holocaust. He saw Jewish discrimination. He saw his family murdered. I get it. He doesn't trust people. He thinks they're going to do it again. Mm-hmm. He's not wrong. History repeats itself, right?
Right.
He's a villain I can get on board with. Also, Michael Fassbender is delicious. So, also, there's one that I'm always... There are a couple that I'm on the fence about that I only like them just because I find their methods fascinating for narrative tension, and that's both Loki and the Joker, because I think that they are avatars of anarchy.
Yeah.
And I'm attracted to that only because I grew up in a very strict household, rule follower, no trouble, and I'm curious about people who don't care about consequence and have the freedom. And it's funny that it's two white men, right? Who have the luxury to be able to be avatars of anarchy and not be afraid of the consequences or say sort of like bring it on with those consequences. So I'm fascinated as a character study of those two. which for me, like, if either Loki or the Joker were men of color, they would have been dead and locked up, right? You know what I mean? Like, I just, it's just a fascinating, it's a fascinating thing. And even, like, Harley Quinn, I'm fascinated by her and sort of the way that she wields femininity.
Yeah. Have you seen Birds of Prey?
Not yet.
It's interesting. I felt like I kept rewriting the first two acts, and, like, everything was there for me, but, like, I needed to rearrange it to, like, it almost, like, streamline it so that we get to, like, the girl, like, she forms a girl gang.
Which is awesome. You know?
And it's amazing.
Love
and
a good girl
the
gang.
Last, like, the denouement is so good in this movie, but, like, I love the girls that she gets to team up with her, and you have, they recast, like, some, like girls to be women of color, and that was really wonderful. But also, like, Harley never is a hero. She does something good, and she regrets betraying people, but she's always going to be
a villain.
A villain and an article of chaos.
To her bones.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something about that where you get the villain to do a couple of nice things, but in the end, they will always stab you. And there's just a little, you know, in terms of building a villain, I find that as a content creator to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about how this person is going to aggravate my main character, which is the point, right? And that's why I really believe in looking at both characteristics of the hero and villain and looking at them as mirrors of each other, complements of each other. How can you stack them against each other so that they have the most friction? And, you know, the easiest example and the one we talked about in when we talked to Victoria Schwab was Batman and Joker, right? Batman is sort of your avatar of, like, order and safety and the moral right. Right? In the same way that Captain America is. Batman protects Gotham.
Protects Gotham, but he's also doing it for revenge against his family.
Yes, but however,
he's not
still
doing it for nobility. He's doing it because he's
but it's
also
the right
entitled
thing to do. But he is, but it's the right thing to do. And when that bat signal goes off,
mm-hmm.
it's the right thing to do for him to come out.
Yeah.
Whether it's revenge because he's an orphan and his family was killed, it doesn't matter. It has put him on the side of the moral good.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the Joker is, again, an avatar of anarchy and against the rules,
yeah.
right? And Batman follows very strict rules and rituals and all of those things. And the Joker is a wild card. And that they rub up against each other.
Right. But Batman doesn't follow the rules because he's a vigilante.
But he's a vigilante that the cops get mad at him at times, but he's still on the moral good side. He's killing villains.
Right. Captain America doesn't do that. He just locks them up. Okay?
Fine. So we'll say that Steve Rogers, Captain America, is the better, if we're doing two buckets of the moral good, morally good versus morally corrupt, Steve and Batman are in the morally good bucket. Steve is above.
Yes.
Batman. Okay? We'll give that to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay? And then in the other bucket, you've got these corrupt
yeah.
sort of things mm-hmm. where, you know, but Batman is still, vigilante or not, he's still in the service of the good.
Of right. He's still in the service of justice.
Of justice and the good.
Yeah.
Versus the Joker is not in service of the good.
Yeah.
Or justice.
So my beef with Loki, I think, is that he was so cartoony in some of the earlier movies. I didn't actually like him until I watched Thor Ragnarok. And Thor Ragnarok had so many dimensions to me because it's a movie about diaspora and also seeking refuge after your entire planet has
been decimated. Right.
And you have nowhere to go. And you're just searching for someone to take you in.
But that's been his whole life, if you think about his backstory.
Yeah.
And that's what's compelling.
That's what's compelling about Loki. And so he figures out a way to, like, squash the beef with his brother. And I think that I really wish that we had been able to see, like, a Loki movie where he straddles the line between being a hero and a villain.
And he does, because he is a trickster.
Mm-hmm.
He's a trickster figure, so tricksters you can't trust.
No.
At all, because you don't know which face you're going to get, and that's what I like about Loki. Because it's about, as a storyteller, you can really piss off your protagonist by creating an avatar of that, where it's like, I actually don't know what I'm going to get, which is dangerous. I'd rather actually know the evil that I'm facing. With Voldemort, you know his what he is, but you don't know what he's going to throw at you, but you know what he is at his core. He wants to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
With Loki, I don't actually know what he wants.
Well, and
all the time.
Right.
It switches. Sometimes he wants to be, you know what I mean?
Sometimes he wants a Tesseract, and sometimes he wants to kill his brother.
Sometimes he wants his father's respect.
Yeah.
Which is at the heart of it. He wants to be recognized as a true child of Odin, right? That's part of the want and the need.
Yeah.
And other times he's just like, burn it all. I'm a frost giant.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know what I mean? Like, so
set fire to the rain.
And I think that that's what makes him more fascinating.
Yeah.
Because then I can't pin down exactly what his intention and his heart is. Voldemort wants to live forever. He's going to do one road. He's going to do whatever it takes to live forever. So we just don't know what's in his bag of tricks, but we know his intention. So I want to know how you built your heroes in the Brooklyn Bruja series. First, tell me how you built your girls, and then tell me how you built those villains.
So
what's your process?
In Labyrinth Lost, for building my heroes, I just sort of pick people who make mistakes.
Okay.
Right? They want to do the right thing, but they also are being a little bit selfish because they, for Alex, she wants to sacrifice her power and get rid of it, right? But then we have to ask why she wants to get rid of it. What has caused this?
So she has a bruise, she has a backstory issue that creates
this. And so that allows a villain to come in. And then you have Nova, who is a small bad, and the Devourer, who is a big bad.
Right.
But for me, she was more of, like, Alex's foil. And obviously, she's going to, you know, she's not going to be there for a very long time. But she is the thing that is creating all of this. And she's, like, the thing that we're searching for at the end, at the labyrinth. And for Lula, they're the only, like, the villain is the small villain.
Right.
But also herself, because she creates this zombie army in Brooklyn.
She created her own villain.
Yeah. Her own villain threat is. Yeah. And it ends up being, like, her ex-boyfriend, whom she tried to save and who she's, like, literally dying for. And in the third
book,
that
she has to save herself.
Exactly.
Which is the most beautiful metaphor.
She has to choose herself. And that's important. And for Rose, it's another sort of big ominous villain.
Mm-hmm.
But also the villain is patriarchy.
Yeah. isn't it always?
If you read very closely. because sometimes the way that I think about it when I approach a book is I think about it this way. There are villains who want it all blindly, right?
Yeah.
There are villains who have lost it all and want destruction or payback for what they've lost.
So revenge.
Revenge. And there are villains who were constructed by society.
Okay.
Okay? And there are villains who are good people that just wind up doing bad things because they are pushed to the limit.
So those are your four categories.
Yeah, those are my four general categories. Sometimes more things appear, as I'm writing.
What about an incendiary? Where does the villain
is...
And don't spoil it because it's coming out.
Yes. Or it just came out.
It just came out.
So incendiary is about... It's about a girl who is seeking revenge because the leader of her unit, her rebel unit, has been taken to the... has been taken to the palace.
And I feel like she is in the bucket of the morally good, but uses some of the methods of the morally corrupt.
Yes, because she has the ability to steal memories. And when she steals somebody's memory, she can create a hollow, which is basically she just takes everyone's memory. She just destroys who you are, your identity. Like, it causes damage to your brain.
Almost like a shell.
And you become a shell of a person. And eventually you're just comatose and you die.
It's really good, and she's really mean.
Yeah, I am
so
mean.
Prepare yourself.
So when she does this, she used to, as a child, she was used as a weapon, using her power for the king and the king's justice. The king's justice is modeled after the Spanish Inquisition. So they use, like, torture methods in order to get what they answers and things and things that they wanted. And because there's this race of magical people, they're all trying to be destroyed. So the evil is obviously prejudice and xenophobia. But then there are three levels of evil. And there's the king, who the king is evil because something was taken from him, and now he is using all of his power to create, to redify that, right? So it's for him, it's justice for the king. And for the actual justice who leads the campaign against the magical people, he thinks that he's righteous in his, like, quest to destroy all these people. And so the all of the evils, the good evil, I mean, the small evil, the big evil, and then, like, the big, big, big bad evil.
Right.
Is all there. And then I have a villainous prince who is just not what they seem. So,
which I love. And you know I love a good sort of, we think one thing about a person and it's actually not true.
Yeah.
Or it's a little different than what you think it is. Right. Or it has a reason.
Yeah. Writing Incendiary was sort of an exercise on figuring out the layers of what the evil was, and how to construct a villain that we never see, that we don't see. We only see twice, in the very beginning and in the very end.
And in the very beginning, it's terrifying. And then when you button it at the end, you're like, I don't like you.
and sort of, it's all of that. Like, how do we create characters and build them on the page so that we see all of the bad things that they do through third person? So it's like hearing rumors about somebody.
Right.
Right? And everything you know, let's say everything you know about me, you've heard from other people. So what does that do when you meet me in person?
Right. It creates this whole image of you, and it makes it huge and massive, which is a fabulous way to sort of set up, and you pay off what you do, because you're not nice. So readers, beware and be ready and hold on to your hearts, because there's a twist in this book that will make you scream, and then be ready for the second book.
Ready.
When I was thinking about for the Tiny Pretty Things series, there are three girls, and it follows all of their things as they're trying to become the best at a ballet company, or a ballet school. And all of them, when you first read each first chapter, because it's told in multiple point of views, you'll say, okay, I know who the bad one is.
Mm-hmm.
I know who the bad one is. I know who the lesser bad one is. And I know who the good one is. And I tried to make and use some of those characteristics that we were talking about in the beginning to make the shortcuts. I want you to think that Gigi is great. I want you to think that June is a little bad, misguided, maybe. And that Bette, my favorite character, is bad. However, as you keep reading more and more, and you go into the second book too, you see those things twist and turn, and you see them all do bad things because ballet pushes them to the very edge, and you see them do that, which is interesting. And I wanted to play with that. The things that you might see at first are not always true.
Right.
The things that you might think, oh, this person is sweet. This person is really nice.
And sometimes
this
why do we...
quiet.
The thing that you do in Tiny Pretty Things is also, like, you take things that we socially construct,
right,
and then allow the reader to say, like, oh, I think that this girl is nice because she's the nice white girl.
Right.
Right? And so, like, we take these preconceived notions, and then we flip them all out.
Exactly.
Right?
So then you're like, oh, well, actually, I might be wrong.
Right.
My stereotypes and my assumptions that I have in my brain literally might be wrong. And then with the bells, when I was thinking of the villain and the hero, I wanted to give her also lots of flaws, but also make her believe in the Kool-Aid that she was given as she was raised and brought up to be this instrument of beauty, this super important person in the world of the Bells, that she was given this divine appointment. And then with my villain, I just wanted her to be petulant and wants it all.
She's awful.
She's awful. I love her, which is awful.
Yeah.
But I do, because I'm like, there are kids and children and teens that are given everything.
Yeah.
I went to high school with them.
Yeah.
They're given everything. And I thought, what happens in a world when you're given everything and the object of the world in order to keep powerful is to become, to be the most beautiful? How does that turn on its head and turn into hyperdrive? So I wanted to have a terrifyingly, cloyingly sweet, gross sort of villain.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, in the audiobook, which I love, which is read by a British woman named Rosie Jones, who's an actor, a voice actor, who's fantastic. She does all of the voices.
She does it so well.
So that you recognize them. The villain's voice is terrifying.
It is terrifying because it's so sweet. Yes. And like, it's almost saccharine.
And it's the only American accent that she does. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
It's the American accent she does for all the other characters she does in the British sort of, actually the British diaspora, because she makes some of the servants Scottish, and like, you get Ireland, and you get all of this, and also the British accent, and then the villain comes in, and she has an American accent.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying, and I'm like, good on you. But, yeah, so I wanted to sort of play with those things, but I think that there are some tips that we can give when you're building heroes and villains. My number one tip is to treat your villain and hero the same. If you're writing out what your villain needs, what your hero needs, write out what your villain needs. What your villain wants, what your hero wants. What the backstory is of your hero, what is the backstory of your villain? And then how do those things rub up against each other?
Yeah.
I think it's good for you to know. Because if you press the bruise of the villain, we need to know why they do what they do, why the hero is standing in their way.
Yeah.
And why that is going to cause problems.
I like to give my villains a quirk. I especially like watching villains that have quirks, right? They have something that makes them so,
like what?
Relatable, right?
Like, so you like charming villains.
But not just charm. It's not just charm.
So like what?
Hold on. I need to look it up. Okay. So, in Daredevil, Wilson Fisk, he loves art, and he is so incredibly lonely that there's something that is relatable to me about that, right? It's like his love of beautiful things and his love of things being perfect and neat and like in order. Meanwhile, he's also one of the most powerful, destructive, terrible men.
So you like contrasts within the villain.
Yeah.
And I guess within the hero too. It can go both ways. Okay. I like that. So that relates to, okay, so giving your villain something that they're known for.
Right.
Something that
because I don't like villains that are two dimensional. I've written some of them too, right? Like I just need a bad guy. Right. I just need a bad guy, right? What is this bad guy? Do we need to humanize them? Right? Okay. And not always, because sometimes a villain, the thing about fiction is that a villain can just be a villain. Whereas in real life, like, some things are just not forgivable.
Right. I also think something that is interesting to do too is to think about what we've been talking about this whole time, and this relates to what you said, is shades of gray as the second tip.
How many shades of gray?
I don't like you. Oh my God. I knew when I said it, because your nose crinkled, that you were going to get me, and here we are. I think that your villain should have 50 shades of gray, and think about, so that they're not two-dimensional, that there are some times where the villain does or has done in the past good things.
Yeah. I just want to believe, like, there's, like, a moment, like Billy Russo in The Punisher, like, I just want to believe that he could turn good if he wanted to, right?
But he chooses
to. Does he have remorse? Is he capable of it?
Right, because we never question if Voldemort would ever be nice.
No, because he's always painted as just this, like, big bad.
Right.
But when the bad guys are people, right, they're just regular folks that can just pick up a gun and create all this havoc.
Right. You want to hope that they won't do it.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm always hoping a bad guy has redeemable qualities and turns to the side of good.
Right. So again,
idealistic and noble.
Right. Here we are. This is where we are. This is like what you love. It's great. And then the third and like final advice tip, I think, when creating both villains and heroes, because I also think a hero can't be perfect. And a hero also, you have to think about them in terms of that gradient as well. Otherwise, they're boring. Your hero has to make mistakes. They have to have things that they don't do well. This is why I was happy to see Captain America turn, because Captain America is boring to me, because he's so noble and so good. And he's not my brand of guy. I like the guy who's drinking the whiskey and smoking the cigar.
Like an old man?
No, how dare you. I like more of the Wolverine type.
That's what I do. I drink whiskey and cigars.
Yes. You are my perfect villain. My perfect mate. No, I like more of... I like more... Or the perfect hero. I like more of the hero that is a little...
Wolverine.
Like, yeah, Wolverine is a villain that... I mean, is a hero that I like, because he has a really... He has trauma.
He has a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah. And I...
Right, and he hates Scott.
Yeah, because so Scott is
Captain America.
Captain America of X-Men.
Whatever.
I guess I like the heroes that show up that are a little reluctant.
Do you like Iron Man?
No.
Okay.
I think he's a clown.
Yeah.
And I don't like that smarmy, slick-talking white man who's cracking jokes and who thinks he knows everything. Hate that guy. No.
Okay.
No, I don't think he's funny. I don't like him. I just like the more silent, but I'm gonna fuck you up type of, like, hero.
Okay.
You know, silent, brooding. That's how I pick my guys. The one at the bar that's just like, maybe. Like, yeah, you like maybe. That. Yeah, like, that's how I like my heroes.
I hate it.
I know, I hate it too. But it's really true. When I think about it, I'm like, oh, I like the one that's...
I just think that, you know...
A little tough. The tough cookie.
The tough cookie. Yeah. So I'm writing Incendiary 2 now. And
I know the title. Hit my Cash App.
And I'm just so prepared now. I'm prepared because I've been studying comic book TV shows for the last couple of months, looking at the choices that people make.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not the one that I like, I know that I'm going to change it. But I also think that, like, there's something so interesting about putting people into categories that we love. And I want to try to get rid of that come book two.
Right.
Because it's just going to be more moral grayness and more violence and kissing.
I mean, that's a good brand.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last thing that I think makes for good heroes and villains in equal measure is a really good backstory. I should know on both sides what is the bruise that if I press it, makes the hero react or makes the villain react,
right?
Which means that you've done deep thought.
You should be able to defend both of these characters.
Absolutely.
Right?
Whether or not it's a good thing to be able to defend them, because mm-hmm. when we defend evil, it can look a little funky.
Yeah.
But I remember I was tweeting about, this was last year or year before last, whenever the second Fantastic Beasts came out, I was talking about Queenie, and Queenie falls into the pact with the Johnny Depp character, which is Grindelwald, and he represents sort of like wizarding world fascism, sort of like they're never going to accept us, so we should just go do our own thing and prepare to like battle with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, well, he's not wrong. And I remember sort of tweeting with other friends about the lines with which the movie makes evil seductive and how powerful that is. And then some fan got mad and was like, he's an abuser and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yes, he is all of those things. Grindelwald is, he grooms someone that, you know, he does all these bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the evil that is presented in there has these shades of gray because Grindelwald is given a backstory of deprivation, right? Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, he and Dumbledore were best friends.
Coded, and lovers.
Right. She is
she
all
She retconned,
over,
but
right.
whatever.
She retconned, but they, and they don't actually go there.
Put it on the page, you cowards!
Right. Put it on the film, you cowards,
yeah.
because they have this blood pact, but I'm like, where's the kissing?
Yeah.
Kissy kiss! There's a lot of places that Hogwarts
Especially, like,
kiss.
Especially, like, young Dumbledore, Jude Law.
Yeah, like, come on, like, get
nice.
It on and poppin'. And, like, and he can't, like, you know, he can't go up against him and all of that, and the tense, it's really tense. And I thought, okay, this to me, this backstory, this bruise,
mm-hmm.
really, really makes his evil intention and his evil campaign have some depth and weight to
right.
it because he comes from a persecuted group mm-hmm. and he's been unable, and it's double persecution, both wizard and queer, and now he can't have, and now he's at odds with the love of his life.
That would have been such a more compelling
You know what
story,
I'm saying?
Bro.
I rewrote it!
God.
Like, come on! And so I'm just saying, like, that's like, that's all the good mix in
yeah,
the backstory
yeah.
to make he's not right. No one's saying that. And I think that's where this fan was like,
yeah,
really
but
messing
I mean,
with
I think
he's not right.
But it's, you know, it's fiction. We're allowed to, like, discuss these characters.
Right.
You know, like, they're a safe place for us to discuss good and evil.
Right.
And if we can't do it in fiction and in epic fantasy, where can we do it?
Right. And so that's where I feel like if you give a good backstory on both sides, both the heroes and the villains can feel, it can be really, really solid where you're like, he's not right for killing all these people and doing all this thing, but I know why he did it. And
yeah.
that to me, I think is powerful and a really good tip when you're writing to really write out like, how would you defend it? If you put your character before a panel of their peers to, like, defend their actions in a court of law.
It's like we're in the Model UN or something.
Look.
Yeah.
Make them defend
Mock trial.
It. Yeah. How, what would they say?
Yeah.
And make sure that that backstory is tight.
Right. Absolutely.
Because
Absolutely.
They do believe that they are correct. And that's the powerful thing about a good villain is that they believe they're right.
And that's the good thing about powerful storytelling.
Right. And the hero needs
make
to...
make us believe it.
Right. And the hero's got to make sure that they, you know, that foil is there. That friction. And I think it's better when they both have compelling backstories.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's a perfect note to end on for
Thank you
our
for...
Heroes and Villains Lounge.
Right. And so for the next couple of episodes, we'll be digging into sort of more heroes and journey and plot and sort of action and how you get your hero moving and how you use your villain in interesting ways to make trouble. And I'm really excited to sort of do this micro deep dive on something that's actually difficult for me to do. It takes me several drafts to get it right.
Yeah, I start with a hero, so.
Again, we have our noble Nancy here. We're renaming Zoraida Cordova.
Do not call me Nancy.
Noble Nancy. And I'll be villainous Viola.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I love it because we literally fight about this all the time because I have this love of villains. I really do. And one of these days I'm going to write a book from the point of view of a villain.
I will too.
Yeah.
How's that?
And we'll go head to head and we'll be like, who can go dark?
Who can go the darkest? Yeah.
Hers will be the noble villain.
Ugh.
And mine will be the villain who
I
reforms.
Am who I am. Anyway.
Mine will be the villain who reforms. And she, because it's Gryffindor versus Slytherin.
Absolutely.
And
that's
what
it is.
That's
two sides of one coin.
Yes. So, but thanks so much
for
listening.
Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next week.
Deadline City is part of the Frolic Podcasts Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.